Welcome to the Sound of One Man Clapping. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. And today I'm going to be joined once again by the sultry hotness that is Super Trooper to bring you another list to end all lists. But first, welcome back to OMC. It's been a minute since you've been on the show. How's your January been treating you?
It's been phenomenal gaming-wise. Non-gaming-wise, I had to go back to work, which is not phenomenal. But gaming-wise, it's been absolutely fantastic.
One star. Do not recommend.
Correct. Jobs. Why would you have them?
That's right.
To get more games.
I'm changing jobs, but that's going to impinge my game life even more. God damn it. So my list of played games this week, this is a bonus episode. It's going to replace the normal episode this week, and we're going to pad that content a little, because I haven't got much for you by talking about the games we played this week. My list of games played, the games that were very short due to, once again, stupid work. I only managed to get a couple of lighter games in with The Peanut and the Fox, which I'm not going to bother with at all, because we've talked about them ad infinitum. So before we get into the meat and the sandwich, what have you been playing lately?
So last weekend, we had Voldemort and Martha come up. You were in quarantine, so you couldn't join us for some games.
Yes.
But we started off by playing Tang Garden.
Aha!
Which I think you've played with us once, many, many years ago.
So Tang Garden's the one with the vistas in the background and the beautiful little pagodas. Yeah, okay. So talk us through that a little bit.
So it's a game where you're building a garden in Imperial China. And you look at the game and the board is just white. White with some gold outlines for where you put tiles and things like that. So it starts off slow, but then after a while you're adding garden tiles and decorations, and suddenly you've got a nice, beautiful, colourful board. It's a tile placement set collection game. On your turn, you're either adding a tile to the garden or you're choosing some decorations and putting them out there. You start with a character who gives you a benefit and an endgame scoring option.
There's a little bit of asymmetry between the starting characters.
Yeah, they each have
very little bit.
Yeah, they each have a different end game thing. Like one of them wants to look at lovely rocks. One of them wants to look at water. One of them wants to look at grass things. And then they get benefits. And as you go along putting down the different terrain types into your garden, the rock, the greenery, or the water, you go up little tracks. And when you get all those tracks to a certain point, you get another new character. So you now have two characters. One of those characters has to go out onto the board, and they all want to look at different things in the garden.
Because unobstructed view is a big part of this, isn't it?
Well, in the distance, you can put these vertical slots of cardboard into the board, which are the vistas.
I remember that.
And then they want to look at different things. So maybe one of them has a waterfall symbol on it. So one of the characters wants to look at as many waterfalls as possible.
Yeah.
And you've got to build a garden out so you can have somewhere to put them, and then they can do it. Yeah, so one of those games where I don't think it's absolutely brilliant, but it's fun, where you start with nothing and you've built something at the end of it.
Yeah.
And it just looks absolutely gorgeous as you do it.
I've only played the once. I remember really liking it. The presence on the table is 11 out of 10, because you've got the Uber Deluxe.
But I think that's just the components-wise. I think the only thing that might be different is metal coins.
Because you've got these little 3D pagodas.
Yep, they're all base.
You're putting people in those?
Yeah, that's right.
So they only face one direction. So they sit in the little pagoda, and then you've got to put trees, and there's other terrains you build out.
Bridges, and then there's fish.
But if this terrain gets in the way of the vista, it's...
No, you get more points for seeing
those
things.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. I remember there was something about that. It was a great spatial puzzle. I remember only playing it once. I think this is one of Buttercup's favourites, isn't it?
Yeah, she enjoys it quite a fair bit. We played it earlier in the year as well, together. But I think it does suffer from very poor iconography. Like, it needs Eno Tool to come in and fix the iconography.
I don't remember that from the one playthrough, but I remember enjoying it.
So, like, different characters want to look at different icons on these vistas, and some of them look very similar.
Uh-huh.
And then just the way the game is built, you can't always see what... You got to almost get up and crane your neck around to be able to see what's on different vistas. And the prettier the game looks, the harder it becomes to pass.
Yep, got it.
Because things start to obscure stuff.
Yep.
But, I've got the big box for it. It's got lots of different scenarios, which all have different little decorations and stuff to put into your garden, which I'm looking forward to trying.
Nice.
After that, Dustin finally arrived, and we got in a game of Manhattan Project Energy Empire.
Nice. Now, I have that on my shelf of firsts. It was gifted to me by Voldemort. It's there somewhere.
Yeah, I remember I've seen it up here.
No, somewhere. I've got it. I've definitely got it. I'm just trying to crane my neck around. It's here on the shelf of firsts somewhere, but I have never... It's on the shelf first, redundant. I've never played it. So, but I know it's one of Voldemort's favorites.
Yeah, it's a fairly bog-standard worker placement game where you're running an energy empire, funnily enough. The twist in the worker placement comes from you have workers, and then you generate energy. And the energy tokens are the same size as the worker tokens. So say you want to go to an area, you put your worker down, you do the thing. But if you want to go there again, or someone else wants to go there, they must have their worker one stack higher than the previous worker by putting some energy underneath.
Because the workers are tiles, aren't they?
They're little
tiles,
like,
so they stack.
Yeah, they're little rectangular tiles.
I've punched it, sorted
it.
I've just never done anything with it.
So you want to go somewhere, you put a worker down, and then next time you put a worker with a bit of energy underneath, and that puts him one higher. Like in Honey Buzz.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, when you're putting the beeples up.
Yep.
The board's divided into three sections. There's green, brown, yellow, which is government, industry, economy, or something like that. And every time you go to one of those sections, you get to activate all your buildings that are that same color. So, for example, you've gone to the government section, you bought a government building, you now have that government building in, you can now activate any government buildings that you have. And you do that by either using workers or energy, and then they'll all give you a benefit as you go along. And then the brown section also has some like resource gathering sections where you can get some steel and oil and things like that. But it's also where you buy power plants. And the power plants are dice. And so you have a coal dice, which gives you heaps of power, but generates pollution. And you have solar, which not much power, but no pollution whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then there's nuclear, which is a bit of both, but the pollution is nuclear pollution, radiation and stuff.
Because I remember pollution management's part of the game. I've read the rule book.
Yeah.
I got it out and I punched it. I read the rule book, but I've never played it. So I remember pollution management's a big part of it.
Yeah, you have a little personal board which has 15 spaces of your environment. 5 air, 5 land, 5 water. And as you get pollution, you've got to put it into those places. And each of those, which doesn't have pollution, is worth a point. And so you've got to try and figure out where to put your pollution and then clean it up as the game goes along, with obviously nuclear pollution being harder to manage. So you can kind of lean in and go, well, am I going to be horrible and just pollute the environment and make heaps of points that way? Or you can go, I'm going to be really, really clean and clean your environment and get points that way.
Am I going to Donald Trump it and drill, drill,
yeah,
drill?
Drill, or let's go for some solar power. It's great. And then when you pass, you retrieve all your workers back. And if you have some workers or energy left over, you can buy some achievements, which are endgame scoring. And then you generate your power. And as I mentioned, the power plants are dice. So when you generate, you roll the dice and you get the energy symbols based on the dice. And then your highest, they also have a 1 to 6 on them. And your highest number, if it has a pollution on it, you get a pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, so say you've got solar, is you roll a 6 on your solar and you roll a 4 on your coal, you don't get pollution. But you take a pollution off the pollution stack. And that's like the timer of the game. So all the pollution comes from these little stacks. And when those stacks go down, you flip an event card, which might have something good, usually at the beginning, and then something bad at the end. It's pretty good. So I leaned into the clean energy this time and end up winning.
You always play the good guy.
Well, no, not always. A lot of times. But for a worker placement game like this, the components are actually pretty good as well.
I remember punching the card stock's good, the token stock's good.
Yeah.
As I said, it was like a year and a half ago I punched it. And I went and I remember watching a rules teach video, I think, and some of the rules really stuck. So clearly it's got a bit of a memorable play, even though it's Euro the Euro. It is a bit bog standardy.
But they're like the oil is little oil barrels and the metal is little bits of steel, and then plastic is little plastic cubes. Like the components are pretty good. The art's meh.
Yeah.
But I did hear, must have been only last month, that I think Grail Games have picked it up.
They're doing a reprint
in a big box.
They're doing a big box reprint. They just announced, I think, 3 days ago they're doing it.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to, for people who love Energy Empire, it's going to be a big whiz-bang Energy Empire. How long did it take to play? Were you playing 3?
We played 4, because Dusty was with us then.
So you've got to take the Dusty factor out of
it. Yeah, it might have been about 2 hours.
So 3 hours without Dusty?
No. It was 2 hours. It only took us 2. It didn't take that much longer with him.
2 hours is all right for 4 players. Yeah. You can get through a Euro in 2 hours. That's all right.
It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, nice.
The next one I want to talk about is, I played it a few times this week and you were able to get a game in with me yesterday. And that's Lord of the Rings, Duel for Middle Earth.
Yeah. I played this with you yesterday. We got a quick game in yesterday.
Very quick game.
And I have my own thoughts on it, but fire away.
So I've owned, I still own Seven Wonders and Seven Wonders Duel. When I got Seven Wonders Duel, I played it a fair bit, but haven't played it in years. And I kept meaning to bring it over to have a try with you at some point. And just keep forgetting about it and have other games as we do.
Well, it's on our tabletop, our token aspirations for this year to play all your Duel games. So we'll have to start putting...
a lot of them. And then at Christmas time, someone was very kind enough to gift me a copy of The Lord of the Rings, Duel for Middle Earth, as its full title is known as. And so the setup and everything, it's almost exactly like Seven Wonders Duel, except obviously the thematic things have changed slightly, but the cards are almost like for like in terms of the resources.
Just a reskin, basically.
Just a reskin.
Yeah.
But, and then the victory conditions are slightly tweaked. So when you play it, there's three ways you can win. You can win if you get all six race tokens. You can win if you either, if you're the good guys, you get to Mount Doom, or if you're the bad guys, you catch Frodo and Sam, or if you control
all seven regions
on the board. So they're slightly different to...
Because Seven Wonders Duel doesn't have an area majority component, does it?
The combat in it is like a tug of war.
Yeah.
So it's like a track.
Right. I remember
you start in the
track
middle.
It's got to go back and forth. And if you can get it all the way to one end, I think you win. That's right.
Yeah.
I played half a game at PAX 2 years ago.
Okay. And then the science symbols, or the green symbols, which are the race symbols in this version, you have to get a certain number again and you win the game. So that's pretty similar. So it's drafting at two players, and the drafting's done by building a pyramid of cards with some face up, some face down. The cards are overlapping each other. And you can only take a card that isn't overlapped.
Yeah.
So once you take a card...
From the bottom up. Yeah.
And then once a card is no longer overlapped, if it was face down, which it usually always is, it flips face up, and now that's available for someone else. It's really good. It's so quick.
It's quick. You know, and we didn't have a lot of time yesterday. I was just sort of blowing past, and you set it up. The teach was maybe... 6 minutes, maybe 8 minutes. It was quick.
It was probably less than 30 minutes to play with the teach.
I would I think so. Maybe 30 minutes, which, we look at Duel games, like we're never going to sit down and play 15 rounds of a Duel game back. I mean, if we play Watergate, we'll play one each way.
Yeah.
But a Duel game, that's what I want out of a Duel game.
Yeah, you know, nice and quick.
We've finished Lisboa and we're about to start something else chunky And it's quick setups, quick to teach, everyone's up to speed, and it's over in half an hour.
I think my favorite part of it is you have to watch all three victory conditions. If you take your eye off one of them, your opponent will win that way.
And we actually got to the end of the cards.
Yes.
We got to the very end of the cards, but you did win on one of the win conditions with the last card draw.
What's going to be my negative, and I've experienced it. So I played it earlier yesterday with Battleships.
Yeah.
We had a quick game of it, and it was a tie in the end. A tie across all three, even after the tiebreaker, it got down to the shared victory. And what we could tell with about four cards to go was that was the result.
Oh, really?
And same thing with us yesterday. We knew with like four cards to go.
Mathematically, we knew the last four cards on the table that we knew you were going to win. Like I could see it. Like
I had five of the race tokens, and
the last one you needed two, was there.
There's
no way for me to block you. Yeah. Either way, you were going to win.
I think you did get to six of the seven regions.
I did. I got six of the seven regions in the end, but it wasn't enough.
And that's probably my negative, is sometimes, depending on how the cards are dealt and the setup of the game, you might get to the last four or five cards of the third era and go, oh yeah.
It's over.
It's over. We know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's probably the only drawback.
How many times have you played?
Three.
So you've not won with any of the other victory conditions? Or you have? So have you won with area majority yet?
No, I've won with the race ones both times.
So
no
one's won with getting to the ring or getting to Mount Doom yet? Interesting.
No. Well, we'll have to keep playing.
Because where we finished on that track, I was playing the Nazgul and you were playing Sam and Frodo, is neither one of us was really within reach of the end of the track.
We were each two away, but there was no ring cards left.
And that's the thing. So I think if you wanted to win on that, you'd really have to be aggressive because we were kind of back and forth. And I just think that to win that way, you'd have to kind of...
get every ring
You'd
card.
Have to look at the flop and go, this is worth abandoning ship on the other things and I'm just going to catch your ass, I would think.
Yeah, but I think if you start focusing on that, well, then you're going to stop taking the other stuff and you're going to lose ground in the other win conditions, which I like. It's,
yeah. There's a push-pull there that's nice. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to playing again.
And the components are great. The art is fine. It's different to some of the other Lord of the Rings stuff I've seen.
The art's clear, at least. The iconography is clear.
Oh, it's very, very clear. And that interesting plastic cover for the ring chase.
It's like a slide rule. It's like a slide rule overlay. So the whole thing slides and then the Nazgul slide up. I mean, look it up on Google Images or BGG, but it is clever.
But it's done that way so that you're never further away from each other.
Yeah.
You're always going to be closing in.
That's right. If you're running, the Nazgul are still running.
Yeah.
They're just not running any faster.
No.
Yeah.
And I did get some upgraded metal coins for it. So now it's playable.
It's playable. Yeah. That's right. It was mostly playable before. Excellent.
Not very quickly, but the one game I want to talk about, which I've played a few times this week, and it's probably my most played game of the year so far because the bubble demands it every time, is Abandon All Artichokes.
Okay.
So have you played that with me?
I have not. I was a spectator for a game here in the bunker a few weeks ago. You were playing with the peanut. Dusty was playing. Dusty loves Abandon All Artichokes.
It's a deck building game, also deconstruction game, because the aim of the game is, for some reason, the designer Emma Larkins doesn't like artichokes.
Yeah.
She likes all the other vegetables, doesn't like artichokes. So you start with a hand of 10 artichokes. And the aim of the game is, at the end of your turn, you draw 5 cards, and if none of those cards are artichokes, huzzah, you've won.
Yeah.
And that's done by, on your turn, a bit of deck building. There's a flop of 5 different vegetables that all have different powers on them. You must pick one. You can then play any number of vegetables from your hand. Everything you play is automatically discarded. Then at the end of your turn, you discard your entire hand and then draw 5 new cards. And what's great about it is it's kind of like an intro to deck building kids, you know?
It's Dominion-like.
Yeah, exactly. And they can see the process of deck building. And what I like about it is there are a few ways to win. Some of the cards will allow you to compost, which is trashing an artichoke, so it gets that out of your hand. Some of the cards will just stuff your hand full of veggies.
Yeah.
So you have either less of a chance of drawing the artichokes because you've got more veggies or whatever. Like, and the veggies can combo. For such a simple game, you can combo veggies.
Yeah.
So you can play a pepper or what we call a capsicum, and it will get a card from your discard pile, put it back on top of your deck.
Yeah.
So you can play that, get an artichoke back on top of your deck, and then play a potato. And a potato composts an artichoke if it's on the top of your deck. So you reveal that and you've set it all up, and it's really good. It's quick.
It's clever. It's sharp. It's easy to teach. And while it's quick, it's still a good 20 minutes. Like, it's a 20-minute exercise, and there's some thinking involved because you've got to look around the table. I remember watching, looking around the table, and the peanut and Dusty and Beelzebub were looking around going, what have you got? What's in your discard? What have you got? And you know, the state of the table is important.
Yep.
And so, as you say, it's that entry-level deck building for the kids. They've got to learn to grok the board state, so to speak, because while it's a very small lever in the game, it is one, and you can play into it. I enjoyed watching it. As I said, I was a spectator. And
there's a little bit of take that in there, but it's the nature of the game. It's almost friendly take that. Like, you know, one of the veggies is flip a card from someone's draw deck, and if it's an artichoke, then they can just keep it, and if it's not, then you take it.
Yeah.
And so you start to buff up your hand with a bit more vegetables and things like that.
But I think what's clever about that is you're not making the decision to screw someone over. The card gets flipped, and it's just, you just suck it, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not,
but
like,
you're still choosing who you're targeting.
You are, but it's like, well, I gotta pick someone. Yeah. And, you know, what I saw was, you know, the girls are kind of passing it around. It's not like they weren't hammering the same person at the table. It's like, well, I hit you last time.
So I do.
The Dad, if that is your name, I'm going to give this one to the peanut this time. And then there's gasps. It looked like a delight.
It's great. It's a small tin. It's got 100 cards.
Anthropomorphic vegetables.
And anthropomorphic. That's exactly what I've got here on the notes. It's such a great little game.
Nice.
And then finally, I just wanted to very briefly mention Finspan.
Briefly.
Only because I played it once.
Yeah.
And I want
to
play
it brief.
No, but I want to play it a lot more before I.
Sure. All right. Well, this is what we'll call his first impression. So, Finspan, Battleships bought Finspan. He's a mad fisherman, and so he wanted Finspan. So he's got Finspan with the.
Yeah.
I want to hear about the deluxe eggs. That's what I want to hear about.
They are very deluxe. They kind of remind me of the berries from.
I was going to say Everdell berries.
Everdell berries, yep. Except they roll everywhere.
Oh, there's no flat edge on them.
Oh, there is, but it's not quite.
It's tiny because they're like a little. They look like a little. almost like a soft lolly.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I think if you bump the board a little bit much, you're going to have eggs rolling around.
So you basically need a little cup.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's
talk about Finspan.
If you've played Wingspan, which I'd say most of the world has now, it's very, very similar, except the board is vertical, not horizontal.
I haven't watched any gameplay. I've watched Jamie Stegmaier did a here's the five main differences between this and Wingspan. And to be honest, because the game didn't largely interest me, I watched the video and I don't remember it. So can you talk us through?
So it's very similar to Wingspan, where you can either play a fish or you can put your worker onto one of the three columns rather than rows like in Wingspan, and you go progressively down them doing whatever actions are on the fish or printed on the board.
Yeah.
So get eggs, draw cards, and then the third column is hatch the eggs into little fish or move those little fish around.
Right.
And when you move three little fish together, they come into a school of six fish and then they're worth more points together. So there's a little bit of a, not area control, but you've got to maneuver these fish around the boards because each fish card can only have one egg.
Yeah.
And then so you hatch that egg into a little fish, and then you've got to try and move those little fishes
so
all into the one.
So they can hold one egg. Can they hold multiple fish, obviously?
Yeah, yeah.
And does that number of fish change depending on the card?
No, no, the fish are unlimited.
They're unlimited. So
yeah, they're just swimming around.
35 fish.
Correct. Okay. But you got to get three into one space.
Yeah.
And so you're moving them orthogonally around the board, trying to get them together.
Nice.
And some fish cards need to eat the little fish to be able to be placed out. It's like a cost requirement. Yeah, I think my very first impression is I think I do like it more than Wingspan.
Yep.
But because I'm heavily invested into Wingspan, I don't think I'd ever buy it.
Yeah, because you've got the nesting box and yeah.
I think if I was starting from the beginning and had played all three and then went to buy one, I would probably buy, well, out of the two I've played, Finspan and Wingspan, I'd go for Finspan.
So can I segue into Wormspan for half a second? Because I love dragons. Like, I love fantasy. You know, we're both fantasy sci-fi lovers, and I love dragons. Love. I've always loved dragons. And I'm the same. Like, the only reason I don't have Wormspan is I don't have everything Wingspan. I've got one or two of the expansions. Yep. I've got a lovely little birdhouse. I've got the neoprene playmats, which is nice. They're really lovely. They're totally unnecessary. And we like Wingspan. The Fox likes Wingspan. I think I'd really like Wormspan, you know, because again, like Finspan, it's got a very different mechanic. And I know I haven't played it, but it's one that interests me, so I can talk about it. You've got to basically explore the caves before you can play the dragons into it. And if your explorers get to the end of the track, it's a similar sort of layout as to Wingspan. You got huzzah bonuses at the end. And then there's this wheel of, is the guild wheel of different... It looks great, but like you, I think it's not that I'm too far down the Wingspan hole, but I don't know that if it's... Look, I'm going to be honest. At some point, I'll probably own Wormspan. At some point, when there's nothing else to buy for 3 months straight.
I think you pick your poison. You go, do I want dragons? Do I want birds? Or do I want fish? And you get one. I think the differences are subtle enough that... I don't think you need all three.
Well, I think Wormspan's a little more complex than Wingspan. It might be a little too much for the Fox. Just that little bit extra of pre-planning and whatnot.
Well, I was saying to Battleships yesterday, I think Stonemaier missed a huge trick by not making Wormspan a kid's version, like they did with My Little Scythe.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think they could have made a kid's version of Wingspan somehow.
With like, Flamecraft Dragons.
Yeah.
Or,
going out there collecting dragons for your castle or something, like that could have been such a great kids game.
The game mechanic, if you were to just unpick maybe one of the Wingspan mechanics, it would be a gateway game for 10-year-olds.
Yep.
It'd be very, look, maybe it's coming. I don't know. If you look at his
Pokemon Span or something. If he wants more money, then he'll make Pokemon Span.
Oh, look, it sells itself. I mean, you know, I think the global sales for Finspan on day two, I think he'd sold 22,000 units on day two globally, so...
And that's just the pre-release.
Right? So, and I'm not laying shade on Stonemaier Games. I love Stonemaier Games, and I'm with you. I don't think you need two.
No.
Until you do, you know.
I don't think I'd ever buy Finspan, but I'd be very happy to play it.
Yeah, nice.
If Battleships brings it down.
Good.
And that's, a selection of the games I played over last week.
Awesome. As I said, I played some very bog-standard stuff. I played the Lord of the Rings duel game with you. We got in a game, we got another chapter of My Island in, which we are loving. We're on chapter 3, And it's the complexity of the tile placement has ramped up a little bit. Broke Peanut's brain. Game 1 and 2 of the third chapter broke Peanut's brain a little, but by game 3 she'd locked that in, which is nice to see.
She said to me yesterday, I know some things that you don't.
She's such a hipster. And we're really enjoying it. And then we got a game of the evergreen, ever-favorite spots last night.
Oh, yes.
That right down, we all had 5 cards, and it was right down the last, and the Peanut won on what in one roll. She pushed her luck, and she knocked us out. So.
We haven't played any spots this year because the bubble's been focused on artichokes.
Nice. Well, it'll come back around.
Need to play some more spots.
Come back around for sure. And that's the games that were. Thank you for filling my podcast with your content, Super Trooper.
No worries at all.
So, by preamble, I'll just say Super Trooper and I live about, what is it, about 6 minutes apart?
Something like that.
Give or take. And so, consequently, we kind of view our collective Hive Kallaxes as one big Uber collection. I try very hard not to buy games he owns, and he does the same. You know, that we have a couple of overlaps. Things where I just went, no, I want my own copy, or things where Beelzebub said, no, we need spots in the house.
Yes.
So we've got doubles of things like Anachrony, where, because I play a lot of Anachrony solo, and we have double spots, and I can't think of a lot of doubles off top. We both have Wingspan, obviously, because...
Terraforming Mars.
Oh, we both have Terraforming Mars.
Seven Wonders, because you've got my old copy.
Yes, you did gift me the old copy, but we don't have a ton of overlap. And what's interesting in that is, in so many ways, our tastes overlap.
But because we play with each other.
We play with each other. Read into that however you like. But our own collections individually are they have a different flavor in that, you know, I mostly, most of my collection will be heavy Euro stuff with a little bit of family weight stuff. Whereas yours is much more broad spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be fair?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, where you've got heavy Euros and you've got mid-tier stuff and you've got lots and lots of that sort of easy to table, easy to play. Whereas my collection is more... Me. It's all about me.
Well, to be fair, I haven't had to buy a heavy Euro for a few years now.
That is also true. But I also try to buy games, if I can, not exclusively, but have a decent solo mode.
Yeah.
Because I get down the bunker and I play a solo game on a Tuesday night, and I play by myself. I play with myself a lot.
Whereas I can't think of anything worse than playing a heavy Euro solo.
Okay, that's interesting. You know, we might circle back to that another time. But you also play a lot of, like, mid... to lightweight stuff, so like Marvel United.
Yeah, but I see them more as like... they're not quite a campaign game, but they're more of a story game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all that's to say that between us... what we have between us? 400, 500 games between us, probably?
Should we be saying this out loud?
Just,
the partners are listening?
No one knows our real names. Well, my partner, your partner, can see the bunker, right? Like, it's an open book. You walk in and you're surrounded on... three sides by games, and the fourth side is expansion boxes on the walls. So.
Yeah, but the fox hasn't seen the secret shelves, has she? The storage unit, the off-site location.
So, Super Trooper came up with the idea, which I really like, was we're going to do a top 10 list. And as you know, top 10 lists are a little different with OMC. We try not to do the, well, these are my top 10 solo games, these are my top 10 heavy Euros. We're doing top 10 games that I love, that Super Trooper owns, and he's going to do top 10 games he loves that I own. Yeah?
That's it.
All right. So, without too much further ado, did you want to preamble with anything else in there?
No. I think you've said it all.
Lead off. Number 10.
So number 10 for me, I can see it behind you on the shelf, is Hegemony.
Oh, okay.
And the reason it's at 10 is because we've played it once.
We have played it once. I've got plenty on my list that I've only played once, interestingly, yeah. But yeah.
I think Hegemony could rise higher if we played some more, but...
yeah.
We need to find two other willing souls to sacrifice 4 hours of their time to play the game.
Over the solo bot, because apparently the solo bot's quite good. So apparently there's a solo bot you can insert. You can play two-player Hegemony, and you throw a solo bot in so that it becomes three-player, because three is kind of the least you'd want to play it with.
Yeah, I look at the side of that box and think, nah, it says 3 to 4 players on it.
Yeah.
Not 1 to 4.
Yeah.
So that's my number 10, Hegemony. All right.
My number 10 is a game that I know we both love, and it's a game that we were gaming at your place, and a tower of boxes 4.5 feet tall arrived, and
yep.
You went, woo, this has arrived. It was Cthulhu Wars. So
yes.
My number 10 is Cthulhu Wars, and it was really interesting because when I did this list, I took my top 50 from your collection. I pumped it into Pub Meeple and I sat down last night with a cup of tea and I Pub Meepled 50 games. And so the 10 that made the top 10, there's no surprise they were there. I was actually surprised to see some things that weren't there. Mm-hmm. And I might close off at the end with like the three or four that I thought would make the top 10 that didn't quite. But the order of the top 10 was really surprising to me, because if you'd said to me last night, well, tell me your top 10, I probably would have put Cthulhu Wars up around 5 or 4.
Oh, okay.
I really like Cthulhu
Wars. Really? I thought you were going to say you were surprised it was in the 10.
No. If I was just sort of plucking out of the ether what I thought my top 10 games from your collection were, I would have put Cthulhu Wars probably top 5.
Okay.
I really like it. Yep. It is bonkers. It's stupid. Right? Like, it is stupid. It's
And chonky.
But when you go to a con or you go to a game day, you put Cthulhu Wars on the table, you have, like, pigeons going, ooh, ooh, all around you going, oh, you've got Cthulhu Wars. I love Cthulhu Wars. That's my number 10.
I just find it hard to get the players to play it.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, Voldemort just hates rolling dice, so...
Look, I'm not a huge fan either, but it's kind of... I look at it like Cthulhu Death May Die. You're rolling dice... You just suck it.
But I think the more dice you roll, the better it is.
It is, yeah.
You roll 20 dice?
Sometimes you are rolling 20 dice, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So that's my number 10. So over to you for number 9.
Number 9, game we haven't played for a while. We've played it a few times, and that's Fallout Shelter.
Huh. So Fallout Shelter, you bought for me for my birthday one year.
I did.
I want to say long time. It was only 3 years ago or so.
And I think it's one of those games that probably suffered from... IP issues where everyone goes, oh, it's an IP game.
Yeah.
It mustn't be very good.
Yeah.
And it is.
It's awesome.
It's a great little worker placement game.
It's awesome. And it's based on a borderline boring as all get out, like iOS game that came out. It was basically a tap, 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 which I played for ages because you're sitting on the toilet the other day, I'm going to tap some mutants, whatever the case is. Fallout Shelter is great. And it comes in like a little lunchbox, a little metal lunchbox, because, you know, if you...
Vault-Tec lunchbox.
Vault-Tec lunchbox, and I love Fallout, as you may know. So, Fallout Shelter.
And it's just the way, you know, you get your QWERTY...
Your special.
Acronym? Special, sorry, special. QWERTY, the keyboard. The special workers, and, you know, so you get an S worker and a P worker, and use them in different ways, and they get better bonuses.
Yeah.
And then at the end of every round, some baddies come in and
they've got start these awesome acrylic overlays that go over the rooms. It's a clear acrylic overlay. So if you get a death claw in a room, it's this awesome clear acrylic overlay.
And then it's in the room.
And it's in your room, and you can see it, and it's got its hit points on it, and there's tons of loot, there's guns, and
so you send someone out into the wasteland, and they come back with a minigun, and next time that death claw attacks, well, you win.
I really like it. Lou really likes it as well, and it's fantastic. I agree.
Needs to hit the table more often.
So my number 9 is one that we tabled twice, but only played once. So we put it on the table, and then the phone rang. It was like, well, day's over, James. We got to go. And then we played it again the following week, and I really, really enjoyed it, and that's Targi.
Ah, yes.
Right? Yep, so Targi, you build this ring of cards that is essentially, I guess it's a city or a compound. I don't know what the theme is.
It's like a trek through the desert, I believe.
Yeah, and then you fill it all in the inside with a different set of cards. And where you stop as you move around the cards... you can interact with the card that one of the cards that's in that row or column.
Yeah, so you put two workers on the outside.
That's right.
And then and where they intersect, you get that
card. You get that card. And I think it's a really interesting game mechanic. It's an interesting game. There's a lot of interplay pieces, and you put these, whatever it is, 20 cards on the table, and you go, oh, well, this will be done in 20 minutes. No, it's like an hour and 10 minutes later, maybe not quite.
No, it's not that long.
But there's a lot to it for a tiny little box. And you bring this tiny little box out that says Targi, and you put it on the table, and I really, really enjoy Targi. And we've, as I said, we put on the table twice, but we've only played it once, and that's my number 9. Yeah. I would love to play Targi.
And I do have for it the expansion. Do you know what it's called?
Targi 2?
Targi, the expansion. But yeah, got to get that one table.
Have you played the expansion?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I think it basically is a whole new game almost.
Oh, really?
Like, it's got a whole new set of cards for the outside.
Yep.
And then a few...
So the same game modules. Mechanic, basically, but it's a completely new variety. Yeah. Nice. Over to number 8.
Number 8 for me is probably the smallest game on the list, and that's Compile.
Oh, I was going to say... Compile. Yeah, okay, Compile.
It was almost my hit of last year, Compile.
As I said, I found Compile at PAX last year, and I managed to get in on a demo, and I immediately said yes. I played one game, and I went, give me this game. give me the playmat was like $20 or something. The playmat's gorgeous. It's just this long playmat sits between the players, and it's not very big. And you don't need the playmat to play, but the playmat's gorgeous. The cards are spectacular in Kapile.
For a game that almost has no art, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the art is just, you know, like, the fire background, the metal background.
But they've all got, like, metallic circuit boards that run around the outside of the cards.
But it's such a quick tug-of-war two-player game.
It is, yeah.
And, like, I own Air, Land, and Sea.
Yeah.
It's in that order.
Yeah.
And, obviously, that's the inspiration for Compile. Yeah. It's almost Air, Land, and Sea 1.5.
It's almost more like Marvel Snap, though, with the...
Yeah, with the way you merge.
With the way you merge and move things around.
Yeah. I think... that like Finspan and Wingspan, I think they are very, very similar, but I think they are just different enough they do different things. Because you've got the retreat mechanic in Air, Land, and Sea.
Yeah.
But yeah, Compile, one of my hits from last year.
Awesome. My number eight is... it's a game that should take a good hour and a bit, and I think we played it in 22 minutes at PlayCon last year. And I have a blast every time we play, and that's Quest for El Dorado.
Yes.
Quest for El Dorado, you own... Do you own all the expansions?
No, there's an expansion I don't own, and then a standalone I don't know, which you can merge in as well.
Right, so Quest for El Dorado, look, I don't want to belabor it. I think a lot of people play Quest for El Dorado. It's a deck builder. It's Indiana Jones. You're racing through the jungle. Last time we played, you built this Uber map that had, you had to loop back on yourself, and... I don't have regrets, but I look back and I go, I probably won't play that map again.
I think that map would be great playing it two-player when you have the two...
When you have the two people. Yes, if you had can two, send one you can down each way. Go one down each way because it had two channels. Quest for El Dorado is fantastic. That's a Dr. Reiner.
It's the big Niz.
It's the big Niz, and love it. Quest for El Dorado is my number eight.
So number seven for me is what I would say is the chonkiest game on the list, but not the biggest.
The chonkiest? Chonkiest.
It's got the biggest chonk factor. And as you know, for me, chonkiness doesn't necessarily relate to size.
Yeah.
It's like an X factor. It's like the Riz.
Castles of Burgundy?
It is Castles of Burgundy.
There you go.
It is. Only with the acrylic tiles, though.
Yes.
That's the chonky factor.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, it's the game that I'd heard about for so long, and it came out with all these different versions, and every new version you look at and you go, it still just looks pretty bad. It
does look pretty bad.
It's one of those games where I never knew anything about it. I never watched a review of it because it was so old. Like, it came out before I got into the hobby. Never knew it, everyone loved it, and then finally you bought the lovely version of it, we played it, and fell in love.
It is, it's chef's kiss. Everything on the table, the chunky tiles, you've got a clear plastic overlay that goes over your duchy that keeps all your tiles in place, you've got castles, you've got the vineyards.
Yep.
The vineyards are gorgeous.
I'd take or leave at the moment, I think.
Yeah.
They look beautiful, but
the thing about vineyards is if they're out there, you have to push vineyards or you don't have a choice.
But I think it's a game where, you know, you roll dice and you're beholden to those dice, but you never feel like you can't do anything.
Yes. Yeah.
You always can do something.
You can. Castle of Burgundy, great pick. Awesome, great pick. So my number seven is obviously one of your games, but it's currently sitting in the bunker. It's a Euro we've played twice. I absolutely love the daylights out of it, and that is Darwin's Journey.
Yes.
So I love Darwin's Journey, and I didn't know I loved it as much as I did till I pumped it through the Pub Meeple. But Darwin's Journey, I think, it's an absolute masterwork of a game. I'm wildly hopeful that you will be picking up the Oceana this year.
There's a dollar pledge, John.
There's a dollar. We'll see if we can push that dollar into... How much was the Oceana pledge? It was about $80 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
I love Darwin's Journey. I think it's an excellent game. It's a Euro. You've got a million choices. It's sandboxy. It's point salad-y. But it also doesn't overstay its welcome. You know, even with Dusty, I think we get through it in about an hour and a half, and 40, which is a really great... For me, it's great.
It's one of those games where... there's a limited time.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not open-ended, you know, until certain points are scored or whatever.
No, that's
like, you get this number of turns to do things.
That's right.
Deal with it.
That's right. So that's my number seven.
So number six for me, we'll keep going on with Euros and Dice, and that's Scholars of the South Tigris.
Oh, yeah, I do love Scholars.
Probably my favorite of the South Tigris that I've played, which is only two of them.
Yep. I've got all three on the shelf. We haven't played Inventors yet.
Yeah.
It's apparently the heaviest of the three, and the box is the heaviest of the three. It's the same size box. It's about 2 kilos heavier than the other two.
But just the puzzle of trying to work out the dice, going back to primary school and mixing your colours and getting the actions done. And like I said with Burgundy, where it's dice, I never feel like I can't do anything.
No, that's right. You roll your dice, and then it's the puzzle of what am I doing with them? It's never, God damn it, I can't do anything. It's, well, I can do 20 different things. Yeah. What do I want to do?
Oh, I've got a dice left over. Okay, well, I'll just burn it, get the benefit off one of the dudes at the top.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's not bad.
It's not bad.
So,
it's not bad. Nah. Yeah. Excellent.
So, yeah, another one of my Euro dice favorites.
My number six, I think, was my first Lacerda.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on Mars. That I think that was the first Lacerda I played. And I know
sure
I've told
was.
The story on the podcast of my first experience with Lacerda. And it wasn't quite the fear in Dusty's eyes when he walked in and saw it on the table. But certainly, I guess, that sigh of resignation of, okay, saddle up, here we go. I love on Mars. We've played it just the once.
I've played it a few times. I thought you might have played it twice with us.
Maybe I've played it twice with you. I know I've played it twice with Lou, and I've played it about four times solo. Because
okay.
after we played it...
Yeah, you borrowed it.
I borrowed it for 2-3 weeks.
I didn't know you played with Lou.
Yeah, Lou played it twice. She really liked it. Smoked my ass, right? Because she's got that brain for it. And, you know, she's a bit like Dusty, where she just spends the time going down the rabbit hole of the puzzle. And. So I think she's played it twice. She really liked it. It's not her favorite Lacerda, but that's my number six. Is on Mars. I love on Mars. I would love to play on Mars multiplayer again. It's a long game. As I said, you know, three of us, I think, on Mars, it's a good 2 hours and change, probably.
Yeah.
And anytime you put a Lacerda on the table that you haven't played in 6 months, it's a 30-minute refresh.
Yeah, just to try and remember the rules.
Just try and remember the rules. But on Mars, number six, absolutely loved it.
So, top half the list, my number five is Carnegie.
Ah, see, I love Carnegie. When you were talking about... games where you... With a timer.
Yep. I was about to say the exact same thing. You only get... Is it 20?
20 turns.
20 turns.
That's
the whole
it.
Game.
That's it.
And they don't chain into other actions. Like some games you go, oh, you only get 20 actions, but you're actually getting 103 because, you know, you're doing all these bonus actions.
Yeah.
Carnegie, you get your 20.
Yes.
And that's it.
But the thing I like about Carnegie is you don't know what the next action is going to be because...
You can
kind of
predict it.
You know it's
going to
be
bit.
One of four things.
Yeah.
And sometimes if... Because you've got these four rails with actions on them. If two of them are the same, you go, well, we're definitely going that route. And you can kind of look around the table at what everyone's doing with their player board.
And
going,
oh, James is next. So he's definitely
going to... He's definitely going
setting
HR
up for this.
Or he's definitely going to build or...
And then wildcard, bitches, woo! And something crazy happens.
Right.
And someone does an action you weren't expecting. And
that's right. Carnegie's great. I love Carnegie. I've got the expansion. We've not played it. The expansion just gives you more departments. It gives you a bit of a drafting mechanic at the beginning for some extra stuff. Can't wait to play it again.
I think its game to time ratio is fantastic.
It is, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think its sweet spot for me is three players. Like,
yep.
Two-player Carnegie's fine.
I don't know, have we played it four?
I think we have.
Battleships.
I think Battleships has played with us once.
Yeah.
We played a four-player game, and it was great.
Yep.
I think at two-player, it's fine. You know, you've got some board blocking that happens before you set up. And
I think you'd rather someone else doing some of the blocking.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because then it's more organic rather
than
the board starts off that way.
Yeah.
Well, my number five is, I don't think it'd be any surprise, I love this game. And I don't know why, because I look at it, and it's all beige, and I really like Dice Worker. You know, I love Botoku. Mm-hmm. Botoku's one of my favorite games. And that's Tekenu.
Tekenu, Obelisk of the Obelisk.
Obelisk of the Obelisk.
Yes.
Tekenu's great. You've got this great big 32-centimeter plastic obelisk in the middle of the table that spins around. I love the mechanic of where, you know, as the obelisk turns, you know, it actually represents the sun going around the obelisk. And when things fall in shade, they change their values. I love the end of round where you've got to balance which dice you're using because you're on the scales of death with Anubis or whoever that is. I can't remember the names. I do love Egyptian mythology. I'm not very good at it. I love Tekenu. I think Tekenu is fantastic. That's it.
And it's got a gimmick. You spin the
big thing.
You spin the thing.
And you move the dice.
Like if you've got someone who's sort of just getting into board games, you probably wouldn't necessarily show them Tekenu. But you can go, hey, check what board games can do these days. You've got a cool little gimmick on it. It's not Mousetrap or Game of Life.
It's not,
hey.
No.
It's a cool little gimmick.
It's got a lot of things.
And it works well.
It's basically six mini games.
Yes.
Right? Six mini games thrown in together with the loose theme. But the art's great. You know, the art's great. The iconography is pretty straightforward once you get through your 30-minute teach.
Yeah.
Love to Kenny. We'll play anytime.
So number four is Dune Imperium for me.
Mm.
I think Dune Imperium is phenomenal.
Yeah, we've played a lot of Dune Imperium.
Yeah, we played a lot too, and we've lucky we've played it a fair bit, 3 and 4,
fairly
recently. I don't think we've played it 2-player for a while. But it's one of those games where it's just first to 10 points, but each of those 10 points you work for,
yep.
And it is epic.
And it plays really well at 2, because there's a little card deck that they've got an app for that basically just simulates a third player taking a space and blocks it out, because that's the agonizing bit with it, is the worker placement so tight. And what I love is they've layered on... Is it two expansions I've got?
Two
expansions is the Rise of Ixion and Immortality. It hasn't diluted the workspace, because one of the expansions is a completely different space and there's no worker placement. And the other one, it's only two more worker placement
spaces. But they're green, which is very... The greens you stop going to anyway after a while.
You do, yeah. Yeah. And it's great. Dune Imperium.
You look at Dune Imperium in the rulebook and it's like, oh, you can play the epic version, which is to 12 points or something. I'm like, that's not as epic as 10.
I play 12 when I play solo, because you're playing against two bots that also score.
Yeah.
And they are so aggressive.
But I think it's like multiplayer. It's more epic to fight for those 10 points than it is to go for 12.
Yeah.
And that's it. Number four, Dune Imperium.
Awesome. My number four is a small box game. It's a Devir game, and I will play it any day of the week, and I love it. That's Three Ring Circus.
Well, you do love circuses.
I do love circuses. The Fox and I, our first date was the circus. We were recently at the circus for our wedding anniversary. I love the circus. I think Three Ring Circus is a masterwork of restraint, in that it's tiny little, not tiny, but it's a small board. And every time you take a move, that board gets smaller.
Yep.
And so every time anyone takes a move, the spaces you can move to disappear. We've talked about my only reservation with Three Ring Circus, and that has to do with the major city scoring. And it's just, it's very luck of the draw. If you happen to get the right card, you're in. And if you don't, you're screwed. But the gameplay I love.
Yeah.
And we've played it at 2, we've played it at 3, and I think we've played it at 4.
4 at PlayCon.
At PlayCon. And love it. Love Three Ring Circus. I'll play Three Ring Circus any day of the week.
Yeah, because you said the board gets smaller, but that's also the timer of the game.
It is. So
every action, you look and you go, oh, they've got all day to run around America and play these circuses. And then every time, the board gets smaller and smaller.
It's smaller and smaller.
P.T. Barnum, Hugh Jackman's getting quicker and quicker around that board.
Yep.
Okay, so
we're on top three now.
Top three. Number three. I think you know my top three.
Look, I think you don't know I can what pick order. One that's in the top three.
Well, number three is Harmonies.
Okay. But I forgot you don't own Harmonies.
I don't own Harmonies.
I wouldn't have put that there. I forgot you don't own it.
No.
It's one of those that I just go, it's like spots. It's one of those evergreen things that comes up. I forgot you don't own Harmonies. Yeah, okay.
Maybe during the week, if Buttercup listens to this, she might be saying, why haven't you bought Harmonies? It's one of her favorite games. But as I said, it was my favorite 2024 game.
Yeah, it was one of your favorite games last year.
It's just...
That was your number one in 2024, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it's just a good game.
It is a good game.
I love those little spatial puzzles.
Yeah.
Looks pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just goes down very smooth. Play at any time. Harmonies.
Awesome. Well, my number three, I actually thought would have been number one or number two. And this is where we get into the very interesting bit of my top 10. My number three is Arkham Horror.
Oh, interesting.
So I actually thought that would have probably been one or two, because I love Arkham Horror.
See, again, I thought it might have been higher up the list.
As in more like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Or okay. So Arkham Horror,
because it's not Euro, which I know is your usual.
It is my bag. I love yours. Yeah. And let me be clear, I'm shithouse at Arkham Horror. Like,
so am I.
I'm not good at it at all. But I do love, you build the deck, and then we often get into like our third scenario, and I go, this deck is shit, right? Like, I'm like, what did I do here? But that tense, you pull the bag, you're drawing out of the bag, and you draw the auto fail, you're throwing everything behind it, you put two or three cards, and like, I'm boosting, it's all good. And you draw the auto fail, and you're like, fuck my life.
And then
right?
The ghoul eats you.
And then the ghoul eats you. I really love Arkham Horror, and I know we're currently in the middle of another very large campaign, but...
After Cycle 1 we might sneak
maybe
a campaign
after Cycle
in.
1 of Van Trespass we'll slip in an Arkham Horror campaign, because I think it's a blast. I think it's a, it's a masterpiece of a game.
Yep.
And the writing is excellent. The theming is excellent. And you just get sucked into, into what's happening.
I think what they've done with that basic system, but the basis of the system and how they've spawned, every scenario is different.
Yeah.
No scenarios feel the same.
Yeah.
And then it's all the core rules plus a few tweaks and everything's different.
Yep.
It's great.
So that's my number three, Arkham Horror.
Number two, so I thought you might know my number one and two, but you might not know them in the order.
Well, I can pick the number, I know one that's going to be on the list, but I just... I'm struggling to think of what... So anyway, hit me with number two.
Number two is Voidfall.
Okay, I knew that was going to be in the top two, so I'm a little stumped, actually, as to what's...
Nah, you know what number one's going to be in a moment. But Voidfall.
Voidfall.
It's It's just great. Like, yeah. It's a 4X game with that deterministic combat, so you know how everything's going to play out, so you can set yourself up for things.
That's right.
And what I like about it, and I think it plays well with Dusty a bit, with his AP, is a lot of the AP is done at the beginning of the era.
Yeah.
Because you can almost program your five actions.
Your five actions or your six actions, yeah.
You almost can do that at the start, and then you're playing it out.
To be clear, I don't, but you can.
No, but you can. But like, unless someone's going to do the wild card, you know, and do something, you can usually sort of see, oh yeah, I know I can attack this system and no one's going to attack me.
And you know when where the Voidborn are coming in, you know how you can see how they're going to move. Yeah. I almost think sometimes, and I might try this as a solo game, setting it up face down, putting all the tiles up face down.
And then flipping them as you move into them.
And you're, surprise, motherfucker! You know, but just to see how it plays, because I think it would be a really interesting variant.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it makes it a better game, that's for sure. But
I think, you look at it and go, it's a 4X game, but it's a puzzle game.
Yeah, it is.
And you've got to work out 100%. The puzzle.
It's a resource management game, top to bottom. You know, I love Voidfall. There's an expansion coming this year, mid-year. They're going to do a campaign for an expansion, which I can only assume is a few more tiles and a handful of scenarios, because that's all they really need to to make more
another
game.
Race or two, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. A couple more factions.
Yeah.
But it'll all fit in the box. There's room in the box.
Just such a great game. I mean,
it is a great game.
Takes a while to set up, but luckily you usually set it up for me before I arrive.
So my number two, I've only played once.
Yep.
And when I sat down at the start, I'm like, oh, this is probably going to be top 10. I had no thinking that this was going to be this high on the list. Because when you said this, we're going to play, I went, okay, man, saddle up. And I love this game, as it turns out. And that's Rococo.
Yes.
So Rococo, I've only played once. Rococo is collecting thread and fabric and making dresses.
But it's a nasty area control
game.
and
it's almost a Lacerda. Like, it's a really... There's a lot of steps to getting a dress made, and there's a lot of things going on the board. The production is gorgeous.
Yep.
The board and the resources and the cards is gorgeous. And it took me by surprise. I as it turns out, I knew it would be up there somewhere. I did not think it would be number two. So, and I know that's Buttercup's special thing. It never leaves the house. That's
got to sign a waiver to play.
Make sure you're wearing your cotton gloves and you know, you haven't touched anything.
I think the theme hides how tight it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Money is tight. Money is resources tight.
Resources are tight. The spaces you want on the board are
tight. The dresses
might
be tight if you've made them wrong.
But Rococo, my number two from your collection.
It's absolutely gorgeous game. I love it.
So number one, I don't know that I can... I should be... Well, you're going to say it and I'm going to go, oh, of course.
Look the other way.
Oh, okay.
Number one is Ark Nova.
Ark Nova.
Yeah. I think it's...
it's the one we played the most. Of course it is.
One we played the most together. It's Terraforming Mars-esque in the symbols and that kind of stuff. But you're not building a map like in Terraforming Mars. I mean, you are.
You're not competing for that map.
Correct. That's your own map. You're not, you know, building on there. But I think... I just love the way the cards play out together. Yeah, sometimes you might be, oh, I really need that Primate card. And there's no Primate cards out. But
sometimes you only have one Chameleon for the first 80% of the
game. But I think... And I think the reason it's number one, probably above Voidfall, is the Marine Worlds expansion.
I agree.
With those new player cards and then the new cards.
I don't agree
that
it's better than Voidfall, but I think that the Marine Worlds expansion makes it a perfect game.
Yeah. I think the reason Ark Nova has also gone over Voidfall is kind of like an event game. Like, you've got a plan for it.
Yeah.
Whereas Ark Nova, you can go, okay, let's just play Ark Nova.
That's right, you can say, I'm coming over on Sunday, and I can put it out, and you can just walk in and go, oh, great, Ark Nova, fantastic.
Yeah. Whereas Voidfall, we can play it two-player, but otherwise we've got to recruit three or four, and then you've got to spend an hour setting it up and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you don't.
Well, yeah, I don't.
Yeah. All right, great pick. Can you guess my number one, then?
I have got no idea. After some of the surprises in the ordering of things, and again, like, I didn't think Cthulhu Wars would be up there.
Yeah. So I knew this game would be in the 10. I had no idea it would be number one.
My guess might be Lacrimosa.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Lacrimosa. Which, again, you know, it's beige. It's like beige with a couple splashes of red. I love Lacrimosa. I love the card programming mechanic.
Yep.
I don't love the...
It's deck building, but your deck never changes in size.
Deck never changes in size. And you've got to strategically plan, you know, because you're programming the cards you want to play. And then those cards are the ones that get upgraded if you choose an upgrade. I love the battle for you know, the completion of the Lacrimosa at the bottom of the board. I love that. I love the little bennies you get from the side as you put your little musical instruments out. I think, although it's beige, 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 I think the art is great.
Yep.
I think the iconography...
There's enough colour on there to make it pop just enough.
I wish the silhouetted bits in the two markets were a little brighter and easier to read.
Yeah.
That's my only... But Lacrimosa, I think, is fantastic. I will play Lacrimosa any day, and I think it is a joy to play.
That is a great pick.
Yep. So that's our top 10. That's top 10 I Got What You Need. So, as you know, whenever we do our top 10s, we like a little sweetener at the end, a little dessert, just because we can. So we're going to finish this list off with three games the other one owns that we are dying to play, or that we really, really want to play, because he's dying to play, right? And because we, between us, as I said, we have several hundred games. I have certainly not played your whole collection. I know you haven't played your whole collection.
That's
and
correct.
You certainly haven't played my whole collection, because I haven't played my whole collection. So we're going to lead on with three games that we want to play from each other's collection. So if you want to lead off, what's your number three?
So number three, when I arrived here this morning, came to the front door, and there was a whole bunch of games. Well, a whole bunch of boxes, I should say.
Yes.
Stacked up at the front door, and I brought them in for you.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, this is this, and this is this. And one of them you mentioned was Imperium Horizons.
Was that on your list?
Number three is Imperium.
Right,
I knew you had Imperium Classics.
I do. I've got Imperium Classics over here.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
I really wanted to play it. I like deck building, and I love history. So why wouldn't I love Imperium Classics?
Imperium is great because you set it all up, you get your little deck of cards, but it's 90 minutes because it's actually it's a
heavy
resource management.
Yeah.
It's a heavy planning. You're buying new cards into your deck. You're working out, how do I get these cards out of my deck? Because there are two different ways to get cards out. Imperium plays brilliantly solo. It's a little bit of multiplayer solo because the only thing you're fighting for this joint market in the middle, but you're really just racing. You're racing for the end result for your civilization. It's a Civ game, and each of the decks is so clever in that, you know, as I said, Imperium Horizons has arrived this morning. Spoiler alert for incoming next week. But Imperium Classics are all historical.
Yes.
It's historical civilizations. And, you know, you play them and they have flavor text on them. They have historical figures. You've got a general or a prime, which is like your Caesar or whatever the case that comes out. And he sort of is the overarching leader for the game. Imperium's great. I can't wait to play Imperium with you. That's great. Good pick. So my three are all older games.
Yep.
They're old. It just panned out that way. There are three games on your collection. And the first one, my number three, is Orléans.
Orléans? Yes.
Orléans, which is... and I don't know much about it other than it's a bag builder, which I do enjoy. I do like... Wonderland's War is one of my favorite games. It's a bag builder. So... Give us the 60 seconds on Orléans, because you've played Orléans.
I own it. I've played it a few times. I got to play it last year, as I mentioned, with LNG at the Board Game Barbecue Games Day.
Project L and the Cracker.
Yes. And
shout out.
And yeah, so deck building. It's kind of, say, bag building, but it's basically deck building.
Yeah.
Except your deck is
in the bag
and then chits. And there's a little bit of like... area control. You're moving around a map to get some resources. The theme's blah.
Yeah, it's a bit loose.
The way like you're building, you're pulling out the chits in the different colors, and they act on different bits of a little board, which give you the actions. It builds well.
Yeah,
it builds really well.
Yep, love to play. Would love to play it.
Yeah,
that's a 2014 game.
Yes, and I do need to get those upgraded bits.
Yes,
unplayable.
Cardboard chits unplayable. Yep. So you're number two?
Number two, I think, is going to be a big, big surprise for you.
Okay, a big surprise.
Big surprise. You'll be like, nah.
Well, I know what one of them is going to be because I was punching it this morning. I'm sure, surely.
No.
No, it's not on the list? Oh, okay.
Number two is Arx.
Arx, the Blighted Reach campaign.
The Blighted Reach campaign.
Okay.
Not Arx.
Yeah.
Because I'm very ambivalent about Arx.
Yes. I think I would have said meh, so I'll take ambivalent, and I think that's fair.
I think...
And you've played it twice now, I think. We've played it twice.
And I think I'm really looking forward to playing it maybe once more.
Yeah.
And then playing...
The Blighted Reach.
The Blighted Reach campaign to get some final thoughts on it. You know what I mean? To see where it sits.
Because that's the game Cole Worley designed.
Yeah.
He designed the Blighted Reach and Leader went, you can't do that. And he had to carve out 80% of his game to then publish the game. So it could be you play the Blighted Reach and go, oh yeah, no, I'm in. Or you might still go, meh, and I'll have to get new friends.
Where I am with Arx at the moment is I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah.
Like the struggle to do what you want to do. I know that's the game, right? The game is you know, do the best with what you can.
That's right.
And I get that that's how it's designed, but it's just not my jam.
Yep.
But I want to see whether the cool stuff added in this campaign makes it worth it for me.
Yep. Because there's, my understanding is when you start with a faction, and there's a real evolution through each of the games.
Yes.
You know, I've had a peek at some of the and can I say the organizer for the Blood Rage campaign is fantastic. The insert that comes with it, the organizer, it is absolutely top shelf. And you're just putting it together going, woo, it's fabulous. Yeah, look, I'm very much looking forward to it. Spoiler alert, when PlayCon comes around, I'm going to probably run a campaign where we play one game each morning at the start. So by the end of PlayCon, we've managed to, you know, to get through the campaign. If we could do it once before then, July's a long way away. We could probably squeeze that in.
Yeah, definitely.
We might have to put ATO away for a day and just do it all in one day. Just do a marathon. But
I think you want at least a third or fourth.
I think so too.
Yeah. I don't think two player. I don't think it'd be very fun.
No,
but it'd be functional, but a bit like Root at two player.
I know Project L's keen to play. She's very keen to play. She's keen to play Arcs. And we could probably get... I know Dusty would play. Not Dusty, Battleships. Battleships would play. Dusty would play. Dusty would play anything, right? Yeah. And the nice thing about Arcs is AP kind of takes... You've got AP, but it's like playing... It's one of the reasons I like playing Castles of Burgundy with him. You roll two dice, and that's your choices. So you can go, well, I kind of want to do this next turn, but you get what you get.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of...
Deal with what you have.
Sidesteps the AP.
Yeah.
So my number two is a game that I know I've been mentioning every 6 or 7 months for 3 or 4 years. It's another one from 2016, and that's A Feast for Odin.
Ah, yes.
So I've never played A Feast for Odin, and you know, maybe I play it and go, great, thanks, tick, I don't have to do it again, but...
I think you'd love it.
I do. I think I would too, and my understanding of the solo game is I think I would love the solo game as well.
That's funny enough, I said earlier, I'm not much of a Euro solo player. I have played that solo.
Yeah.
And it works out well, because you play against yourself, because you have the two different coloured meeples, like you have, you know, two player colors, and on one turn you put out one color,
yeah,
and then they stay there,
yes,
and then the next turn you play,
so you're blocking yourself
out,
yeah,
which is
and you, nuts. You got the polyomino game at the bottom of the board,
and it's basically just scoring as yourself when you play it solo, but yeah, it's such a great game,
yeah, awesome. So look, that's on my list. I would love to play Feast for Odin,
yeah,
and you've got the expansion for that, the Norwegians,
yeah.
Great. So number one on my collection that you want to play, and it is not Galactic Cruise, which arrived this morning.
So I wrote this list probably last week.
Yeah.
So
Galactic Cruise hadn't arrived yet.
Hadn't arrived, so yeah, maybe it would be in on there.
Yep.
So I had to settle for a game of similar size.
Okay.
Similar artistry.
Okay.
And it's a little bit of a cheat because I used to own it and I sold it.
Oh, okay. I know what it is.
It's Lisboa.
It's Lisboa.
It's Lisboa.
Yeah. You owned, when I met you, you had Lisboa.
I did.
And I bought Lisboa unplayed, I think, after we played on Mars. I went down the rabbit hole and I thought, well, which is the first one I'm going to buy? And I bought Lisboa. And you said, why'd you buy that? I own it. I'm like, Lisboa's fantastic. Lisboa, I think, if you said to me, which is the best Lacerda just all round?
Yep.
And it's Lisboa because the theming is great. You love history.
Mm-hmm.
And the theming is great such that, you know, the Marquis behaves in the game the way the Marquis behaved in Lisbon. And the King behaves, you know, when Lisbon was trounced by flood and earthquake and fire all at once, the King basically ran away and hid in his room, and he only came out to open public buildings. So the only thing he does in the whole game...
Cut a few ribbons.
...is he cuts a ribbon and he scurries off back to his chambers, right? That's the only thing he does. The interplay... So I've played Lisboa with Lou, I think, 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. She really likes Lisboa. Lisboa's fantastic solo. It's absolutely fabulous solo. I actually think it's... I actually taught Dusty Lisboa... he didn't watch a video, right? I've played two player with Dusty. He really liked Lisboa, but I basically was able to teach him. I think it's one of the easiest to teach because the interplay mechanics make sense.
Yeah,
you know, they really make sense. Wow, that's great to hear. Lisboa, I love.
I'm looking forward to playing. We did a whole rules teach. We were going to play it on
my birthday.
On your birthday,
I circulated the videos. We were going to play Lisboa on my birthday.
And what did we get timed out playing in the morning? Wonderland's War, was it?
We played Wonderland's War first, and we just ran out of time.
Or your Muggle friends arrived.
Yeah, it could be. Could be the Muggle friends arrived.
Yeah. Didn't get to play it.
Yep, good pick. And because my token aspirations for 2025 is to play every Lacerda in both our collections, we'll get to that. So my number one is a game, again, this is 2018, as I said, the three games are all quite old, and this is one that, again, I don't know a lot about other than the board looks wild. It's from one of my favorite game distributors, and all I've heard about it is it's wild and crazy and heaps of fun, and that's Cerebria.
Yes.
So Cerebria, and I've said a couple of times, oh, let's play Cerebria, and you've said, oh, we need, I think you said we need three people to play.
No, it's a four-player game.
Oh, a four-player game.
2v2.
Is it 2v2?
You can play 1v1,
yeah.
And it loses a bit. Like, I've only played it the once.
Okay, so it's 1v1. 2v2, it's not 1v1v1v1.
I think you can play it that way, yeah. But it's designed as a 2v2 game.
Right, I didn't even know that. It just looks wild. The board is like, the board looks like, it's Technicolor. Like,
someone's tripping on a bit of...
Yeah, and everything I've heard about it is that the gameplay is just wild.
Yeah.
It's a bit Cthulhu Warsy. You just saddle up and you just go along for the ride. So Cerebria, yeah, would love...
No, I definitely want to play that. It's hard because you need four players,
yeah,
willing to play
a 2v2.
A heavy, wacky 2v2 game.
Yeah, and yeah. So interestingly, there are some games that didn't make the top 10 that I had assumed would. So if you'll indulge me, there's some games I assumed would make the top 10.
Your top 10?
I assume would make my top, yep, 10. Root, because I've really come to really like Root. Mm-hmm. You own Root. I don't. I thought Root for sure, but so these are basically honorable mentions. They're in my top 20, but not top 10. Gugong.
Yes.
Ankh.
Yep.
I really like Ankh, even though the last time we played it wrong.
We still played fun we playing
still
it.
We still fun playing it. Teotihuacan. It's a great game. You know, Furnace was in my top 20.
Yep.
Everdell was in my top 20. And Maracaibo was another one.
We played a lot of Maracaibo.
And that was in my top 20. So they made the top 20. And I kind of, no surprises that they were up there. But I was shocked to not
Seems
see...
Seems like some of them, the ones at the top, are the ones you've only played once or twice. And you're like dying to play more.
It's possible. It's possible.
It's driven them
know,
up.
You know, my experience with them is sort of skinned with that. Well, it's got that glow of I played it once and maybe I'll play it. But I don't think... I usually sort of have a feeling after I played a game once if I'm going to like it. Mm. You know, I don't know whether I'm going to love it. Like, Root was one of those. The first time we played Root, I was like, oh my God, if I knew it. And then the second time we played Root was at my place and you brought Root and we go, we're going to play Root. And I'm like, oh God. But actually, that was the game where it clicked. I finally, halfway through the game, went, I see what's happening.
I think we played it twice in a week or something as well.
Yeah.
Which helped.
Yeah, it helped a lot. So that's it. Anything you want to throw in there for honorable mentions or anything else?
No, not off the top of my head. Nucleum is another one that's up there.
Yeah, we haven't played enough Nucleum, I think. I'd really like to play that more again.
And probably Revive would be...
Revive's a great game.
A close one.
With the expansion, because the expansion apparently...
I haven't tried that.
I've got one. No, we haven't. We haven't. Nice. Well, that's it. That concludes OMC's latest bonus episode. Big thanks to Super Trooper for organizing the program. More to come. I know you've got more bonus episodes in the tank.
Good if you have this plan. I don't mind being the second man.
There you go. We can't rename this Two Men Clapping because that's not going to get through the censors. And you can reach us on all the socials as usual. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. Give the page a like and follow, because once we get to a certain point there, it crosses a threshold with social media and I can start doing live streams and all kinds of other stuff. You'll be able to see our sunshiny faces. We can do some half playthroughs or whatever. But we can't do that until we get to a certain point. So if you feel like throwing a like, that'd be great. You can email me at wonmanclapping@gmail.com. Instagram is the number one man clapping. And thank you, as always, for your time. This bonus episode has been brought to you by Lumbar Support. We couldn't play ATO for 12 hours without these delightful little cushions in the small of our back because we are middle-aged men. As it is, we only need to stand to get food and get rid of food we ate 6 hours ago. It's living. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. And remember, I don't have anything in there.
Nothing to remember.
That's it. Remember nothing. Remember nothing. Every day's new. Just start with a clean slate. It's Memento the game. Peace out, mofos. Locked in the bunker, shadow shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pound and hearts they quake. Words. Remember nothing. That was all planned.